Hi, Jim Roddy here from RSPA with some special news before we start today's pod. Registration is now open for Retail Now 2024, the Retail Technology Channel's number one trade show, education conference, and networking event. Join RSPA and Retail IT Channel leaders live and in person July 28th through the 30th back in Las Vegas on the Strip at the Paris Hotel. With nearly 200 exhibitors, Retail Now is one-stop shopping for VARs and ISVs. And with an expected 1,600 or more attendees, it's the place for extreme industry connectivity. Across just 48 hours, you'll meet new partners and new solution providers who can accelerate the success of your business. If you're serious about the Retail IT channel, you have to attend Retail Now 2024. Again, July 28th through 30th in Las Vegas. Retail Now is where the industry meets. For all the details and to register at discounted early bird rates, visit the Retail Now website today at gorspa.org/retail now. Again, that's gorspa.org/retail now. I hope to see you there, and I hope you enjoy this episode of The Trusted Advisor. Welcome to another episode of the Trusted Advisor podcast and video series powered by the Retail Solutions Providers Association. Our goal on the pod is to accelerate the success of today's and tomorrow's leaders in the Retail IT channel. I'm Jim Roddy, back with you again. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, we have a very special episode for you today. The RSPA recently published its 2024 Retail IT Channel KPI study. This is the eighth year we've done the report, and we've invited two veteran channel executives to help us dig deep into the numbers and tell you what it all means for VARs, ISVs, vendors, and distributors. Now, before we meet our guests, if you want your own copy of the Retail IT Channel KPI study, go to gorspa.org, find resources in the top nav, then select industry reports from that drop-down menu, or if you want to shortcut it, just Google RSPA industry events and it should be your first result. If it's not your first result, let me know. I'm curious who else is producing reports under the RSPA. We might want to peek over their shoulder a little bit and see what they're doing. All right, our first guest analyst today is Dean Reverman, the Vice President of Marketing for value-added distributor Blue Star. Dean joined Blue Star in 2011 after 12 years working for a Kentucky-based VAR. Dean's a member of the RSPA Marketing Committee and co-host of the award-winning Tech Connect podcast, which is nearing 200 episodes. This is Dean's second consecutive year helping us analyze the KPI study. Dean, welcome back. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be here. I'm honored to be on this. There's really good information. Excited to talk about it. Good stuff.
Excellent. Thank you. Our second guest is Will Atkinson, the Vice President of Customer Experience at ISV VAR Hybrid POS Nation. Will was president of CAP Software from 2006 to 2020 until the acquisition by POS Nation. Will's been active in the association as well for many years on the membership committee, and he's currently in his first term as an RSPA board member. Will, welcome to the Trusted Advisor.
Thanks, Jim. Excited to be here. Looking forward to getting into some of the interesting tidbits we can tease out of this survey.
Fabulous. And we have not coordinated. You're going to see, we're going to ask what jumped out from the study. We have not coordinated. We'll see if we repeat. It's almost like everybody's showing up at the same event wearing the same dress or suit or something like that. So we'll see how we go. So again, we're asking Dean and Will to analyze the KPI study because they both bring a broader perspective of the channel. As I mentioned, Will works for a hybrid ISV VAR who also has reseller partners. So he has that perspective. Blue Star works with hundreds of VARs and ISVs throughout North America. So Dean has a front row seat to all the changes in the solution provider community. Now, Dean and Will were among the first RSPA members to receive text of the 2024 study. So they have had some time to study the study and digest it. So, all right, like I said, we are going to have an open-ended conversation here. The KPI study is over 8,000 words plus thousands and thousands of digits. Will, if you want to go first, what was the one thing that jumped out to you from the KPI study?
Yeah, as you say, Jim, there was a lot in there. It was a lot to digest. And something that I kept coming back to was not one of the top line revenue numbers, but we get down further in the report to the niche verticals section. And something that we talked about a lot as a pure ISV at CAP, and then we've really focused on at POS Nation. And, you know, I wanted to highlight that. And it's interesting to see that people are doing more of it, but it's also interesting to see how few people are really picking a niche or small set of niches and building their business model around it. And there were a couple of individual comments that were interesting, people saying, you know, in the negatives in competition in some of the other areas, like, oh, getting beat by the big guys or competing with those ubiquitous brands that we see, like a Square or a Clover or a Toast, that are all things to all people. And small ISVs, small VARs, medium ISVs are not all things to all people. We can't do it. You know, we can't go out there and compete with the scale of those large competitors. And bottom line, they're going to, and then there were several other comments like bank sponsored ISOs or bank sponsored ISVs are giving away hardware. You know, they're, so the value prop to the general, just kind of, this is a box type merchant is, hey, we'll give you free stuff and give you this pretty decent software. You'd be, you know, it's obvious, like just, I'm going to sign up for that. But if I'm a, and there was an example in there, if I'm a bar or a nightclub instead of just restaurants, like, okay, maybe I have different needs. I have different support needs. I have different functionality needs. And same thing in the retail verticals, that liquor got called out as like 45% of businesses are focusing on that, you know, or bars or ISVs. And I think there's been a lot of hesitation, especially if you're a bar or even a burgeoning bar ISV hybrid, like how do I go specialize? You know, I'm getting my software from a vendor. What does that mean? I can't just say, well, we only do liquor stores. Well, sure you can. You know, you don't have to have a liquor specific software. You tailor your marketing. And there was another call out like, hey, marketing's too expensive. It's too expensive to go compete for SEO or the paid leads, lead aggregators, all those things. Because if you're searching for retail POS as a term, yeah, you're going to lose to Lightspeed and Square and Clover all day long. But if you're trying to get liquor stores and smoke shops in these zip codes, you know, in my metro area or subset of a metro, then your competition for visibility is much lower. So, you know, marketing's easier, marketing's cheaper, but then the upsides get better on the business model side because I can tailor my offerings. I can go say, okay, we've got this software. And even if you're using more of a general retail or general restaurant software, you can specialize your understanding of it, your sales team, your tech teams, your deployment teams. And even if it's a small group, like if your sales guy has to go meet with, and we don't sell restaurants, but I'll pick on restaurants since I know so many of our VARs do that. Like if our sales guy is supposed to go sell to Chinese buffets and country cooking restaurants and delivery places and nightclubs and bars and taco trucks, like how does he know the value prop and the features that each of those verticals need? He doesn't, you know, so he's going to go in with the same like top 10. Here's the things that our software is good at. Well, taco truck doesn't care about delivery and, you know, nighttime support, whatever it is. And so you can refine your offerings, you can refine your internal knowledge, and then you can build out, like as you learn more about that vertical, say, okay, my software does this, but my merchants are asking me for a scheduling app, or they're asking me for a delivery option, or they're asking me for a shipping integration or whatever it is. And this is a key growth to becoming one of those hybrids is how do I add on to my existing software platform? So you hire instead of just a technician, you go hire like a budding developer. And I, you know, for anybody that's been hiring, I really didn't want to pick the HR topic because yeah. It's more about HR, but it does trail down to this is like, you know, a lot of people put like trouble hiring techs and where the pay scale was. Well, if I'm out trying to hire techs in a big metro area at $45,000 a year, I'm probably not going to get a lot of applicants or I'm not going to need good applicants. But if I'm putting out a job post for a tech at 55 with some DevOps components or a little bit like app developer, and it's a career path now. It's not just, hey, go do installs and answer the phone at 10 o'clock at night or carry a pager, you know, like somebody from the 80s. So, you know, we can get away from that very negative, you know, or potentially negative connotation of just a support tech. Like I have a path now. Because I mean, when we're hiring techs, they'll ask in the interview, like, what's the career growth path here? And if you say, well, you can get a little raise next year, like, you know, they're just not going to come to work for you. But if you say, well, you know, we've got this realistic path, like you become good at that, you learn this and you figure out how to work with our other vendors and bolt these things together. You don't have to go hire a full stack developer. But most of the tech resumes I see these days have either cybersecurity experience, limited dev experience. You know, they want something beyond just like internal IT, right?
Yeah.
And so now we're building out like security inside the company. We've got a career path for our employees because turnover is hard. You know, it's very expensive for a small company. But then we're building out additional features so it's easier to sell because I can go to a bar, I can go to a nightclub, I can go to a liquor store and say, hey, it's not just like retail software. It's four liquor stores. We've got these integrations. We know how to work with your vendors. We know how to do the right kind of payment processing that you need. So you're going to be able to sell potentially at a higher price point you know, we've seen again and again, like if you're selling a generic solution, you're just competing on price. So I've got to go rock bottom. That's just the only conversation is go to the bottom.
And so you've done a good job tying a bunch of things together. Is essentially like the main point that you started off with, you're surprised that there's not more specialization that came out of this survey. And so is that kind of your point? And then Dean, before I let you go, I'm going to give the exact stats. Is that essentially what you're saying? Well, you thought, man, we'd have fewer people complaining about going head to head with the broader brands and more specialists. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think there's a lot of value that's being untapped.
Great. And so, Dean, before I get to you, I just want to share, because some folks might not be reading the report. If you want to pause right now and go and download the report on the Artist Pay website and read along, that'd be fabulous. But some of the things in case you're driving and not able to do that. So the study's final question asks about threats, challenges, and opportunities. And the number one most mentioned threat or challenge was competing with the direct sold POS solutions backed by payments companies or VC firms. So that's one thing that Will alluded to. And then we had another question that said, over the next 12 months, which of these niche verticals do you plan to engage in or seriously investigate? The runaway leader, number one, was wine, beer, liquor at 45%. But then the next, you drop all the way down to ethnic grocery and restaurant at 28%, cannabis at 21%. Then you get into entertainment, recreation, amusement parks, bowling, golf at 20%. Then there's a tie for hotels, lodging, resorts, and garden nursery at about 17%. There. So those are kind of the numbers behind it. Dean, do you share Will's perspective, or what questions or thoughts do you have in terms of surprise that there, you know, aren't more VARs and ISVs who are niche focused?
Well, no, it's a good angle on the KPI study. It is interesting to look at that. And, you know, when we take a step back and look, you know, you hear in the marketplace, and we have data to back it up, there's less and less resellers out there. So, you know, just talking pure resellers, not hybrids or ISVs. So, you know, it's interesting when you have that shrinking VAR base out there, expanding solutions. I think Will hit the nail on the head there, right? Maybe it is a surprise that a lot of them aren't getting more niche oriented, but not a surprise that they're growing their overall product portfolio. And so the comb out that I had on the KPI study is profits, profits, profits. And the reason why I kind of hung up on that one is, if you remember, if you could rewind the clock about 14 months or so, everybody was talking about recession. Everybody was talking about interest rates, and there was real fear, you know, kind of in the marketplace around, ooh, what's 2023 going to look like, you know, coming out of the pandemic and there's supply now available and stuff like that. There's some genuine fear there. So it's a good news. And I'll give you the statistics. The number of solution providers reporting margins of 20% or greater held steady. Now, you might think that there's no news there. If you ask me, that's a win. If the win is, because again, our fear was, geez, profits are going to shrink. You know, the resellers are shrinking. Their profits are probably shrinking. So it's making it less and less attractive to be in this business. But if the data shows, which it does, that actually profits are unremarkably solid in the sense that there's not a lot of wiggle room there. In fact, furthermore, in the KPI study, you see that the expectations for 2024 are higher. 4 in 5 are expecting double-digit margins in 2024 compared to 70%. So that's 80% compared to 71.6% in the past. So that's good news, right? So resellers are holding onto their profits, and they think that they're going to be more profitable. Now, they're not getting it in the hardware, which also comes out in the guide, right? Hardware margins remain thin. I know you're preaching to the choir when you talk to me about that. So I get that. But what's super encouraging is the fact that, yes, and Jim, you've been preaching it for years, got to grow, got to expand your product offering. In fact, I love the link that you guys had to the ultimate list of recurring revenue products, because here is your hit list of, I don't know, 30 some odd. How many you got? Oh, no, I'm sorry. 49.
Nearly 50. Yep.
Nearly 50 areas where you can expand your service. So I think Will was hitting the nail on the head in there, in the sense that, you know, the message is out that you got to expand your offerings. You got to be a solutions integrator, is what we call it. You know, the VAR 2.0 to us is like a solutions integrator. Hold on to those profits. So you've got the profits, right? Your profits aren't eroding, but where the growth is happening are on those services. That's what kind of jumped out to me.
Great. And Dean, I'm not surprised that you're surprised. That was one of the things that I wanted to ask you on this call, is because you know, Blue Star works intimately with a lot of these hardware providers, but we hear, you know, kind of things make headlines, or you get to see, hear about them just talking publicly about backing off in terms of things that they're doing. So is that kind of what you're seeing? Like, wow, it's interesting that the suppliers are not having the best years ever, but their partners are having fabulous years in terms of sales and profit. So it sounds like that surprised you.
Absolutely. Well, it was just a fear going into next year, yeah. You know, and you see, you know, you can talk yourself into the glass half full or half empty scenario, right? Oh, there's less and less resellers, less and less hybrids out there. What are the driving factors around that? Yes, vendors had a very tough year last year, but it's abundantly clear that, you know, what we have been communicating, I think, Jim, like I said, the RSPA has been doing a great job, is look, you got to expand your tech stack. You have to look at other ways, through managed services, through things, even like what Will mentioned there. You have to. I mean, in order to survive, you have to do that. So maybe if you're a reseller that is what we call a lifestyle reseller, and you're just letting your ship sail and run aground, I guess, and you have no interest in getting out of it. But if you are, you have to, right? You have to pivot to these things. So
the snotty clarification I make is, I say you should, but you don't necessarily have to, because in the United States, it's illegal, or it is legal for your business to stagnate, to decline, and to go out of business. So you don't have to do it. There was no mandate to do it. You can, you know, that's how capitalism works. But it's your choice what direction you want to take. So, all right, Dean, thanks for that. Will, what was your take? Were you surprised? I'm curious, again, because now you're spending less time with hardware suppliers, manufacturers, than maybe Dean is from his perspective. You're spending more time with your partners. I'm curious, did the numbers surprise you? And I'll get to a few additional numbers in a second. But just in general, those VAR profit numbers surprise you?
No, not shocking, you know, maybe a little bit surprising because of, you know, the risk that Dean pointed out. But in the way I've kind of been thinking about it is, you look at the extreme stress on the market for two and a half years there during COVID. And to your point about it's allowed, it's totally legal in this country to go out of business. Well, a lot of people did, you know, a lot of people suffered. A lot of people didn't make plans for those supply chain difficulties or customer, you know, a lot of, you know, the focus on these broad markets continues to distress me a little bit, because we say, like, you put, and I'll contradict myself from my earlier point, like, if you put all your eggs in one basket and then the basket goes away because the government says all restaurants have to close, you know, you're going to have a hard time. We were very fortunate that we had spent several months refining our niches and only focusing on retail. And then, like, our verticals were the ones that government said had to stay open. So, you know, it was, knock on wood, like, not some great wisdom on our part. But I think what we're seeing here are the VARs that made hard choices during the pandemic and that made hard choices to prepare for supply chain disruptions or pick different vendors or dive into markets that they weren't comfortable with, but figured out how to survive during COVID, now are positioned for much better results, that now the market's freeing up. You know, stores have credit. There's all the equipment vendors have product on the shelf. So all the things that we put into place and those building blocks that were really built through blood, sweat, and tears are now, we could just deal with cash and growth instead of pain.
Yeah, the decisions of a couple years ago, or even years beyond that. I remember that was one of the first business lessons that I was taught when I joined a board. That's what they said, is the decisions we make now, they might not make a difference next week, but 3 years, 5 years, 7 years from now, they will. So, Will, before we get to your next point, just to add, so Dean brought up about the profits. It's also that VAR sales top line was strong as well. So the report says VAR growth numbers have held steady or improved slightly year to year, and 2023 saw that trend continue. VARs under a 5% growth rate, that sales declined, were flat or grew 1 to 4%. They dropped in 2022 to just 34.7, best result in the 7 years at that point of the study. But in 2023, it dropped again as well to just 30%. And again, so, and no VARs reported a loss in 2023. Mm-hmm. That's never happened before. And then also those ISVs and hybrids also had good numbers as well. So again, those folks had good years. All right, Will, what's another part of the study that jumped out to you?
So it really ties back to that, a lot of that data you were just sharing. And there's one call out specifically that says, hey, there was this 2-year lull in that track record of growth, and then also this track record of migrating or transitioning business models to a pure as a service model. You know, we've been, again, you've been preaching that model for 2-3 years now.
The first Business Solutions Magazine event, that's where I'd worked before, on recurring revenue, that was 2013. And yeah, we had been talking about it for at least a couple years before then. So I'm like, yeah, I guess it's been over a decade. Exactly. been yammering on about recurring revenue.
I think you and I have been preaching that model since like 2008 or 9, probably. You know, it's been exactly a solid 15 years. We've been saying, hey, guys, you need to be thinking about this while acknowledging that it's hard. And so, you know, I thought that we saw the lull in the data, you know, people self-reporting that they, you know, in 2021 had planned on it, and then 2022, 2023 really weren't able to do it or even backslid somewhat, was really interesting. Like, I don't know if I was self-reporting, if I'd be that honest, really, you know, like, no, we're really still SaaS company, even though we really did a lot of projects this year. And I think that it's very pragmatic for a VAR or a hybrid or even an ISV to say, well, you know, in these times, to Dean's point, like everybody was struggling in 2021, 22, 23 through the end of the pandemic. So to see that lull happen was not really terribly surprising. But to see it starting to turn around is really positive. And so, you know, I just want to call that out, like, hey, we're seeing those businesses that did survive, that made those hard choices, like now they're in a position to double down. And, you know, so I hope we see at the end of 2024, like a big change in that number, like, you know, some acceleration of it. Because we don't want to get complacent and say, okay, things are good, you know, like
yes,
the economy's growing, and so let's just keep taking that project work and not worry about transitioning, because there will be something next year, the year after. You know, we've got to keep this momentum up and insulate against relying on those projects that may go away.
Yes. Right. Good point. And so, Dean, before I get your take on that, so just again, reading from the report, as longtime proponents of the as a service business model, it's kind of right where we started. We're thrilled retail IT solution providers continue to embrace recurring revenue. The number of solution providers 100% completely transitioned to as a service hit a record high 33.8 in 2023, surpassing 2022's record of 28.6. And survey respondents expect that figure to increase to 43.7 in 2024. The projections continue to chart out as a ski slope where every category with more recurring revenue surpasses every other category with less recurring revenue. This would be great where if I could share my screen, because it's hard to draw that in your mind there. But yeah, so those are the numbers behind it. So Dean, what's your take on recurring revenue that Will brought up?
Absolutely had this highlighted as well. I mean, the message is finally gotten out there in regards to that. I would like to riff a little bit on why was there the lull on the software side? What was up with that? You know, recurring revenues coming off the report here. There was a 2-year head scratching lull, which I agree with you, where ISVs, you know, there was kind of like the net nothing, no real change in that. But then we saw the growth kick back in this year. I mean, I don't know if that was just an anomaly, right? Like, did people read the question correctly? I don't know, Jim, if you have an opinion on why there was that lull, because to me, there should have been just that steady, you know, rise in recurring revenue. We don't need all
the things. I'm curious if Will has any insights into this, being in the ISV world.
Yeah, having been an ISV for a long time, that one absolutely stood out to me. I said, you know, for people that had the option of project work, you know, a VAR, this feel like, okay, let's go sell a big system just to get people through it. Like, sure. But what am I doing as an ISV that is essentially project work? And really the only thing I could think of is you've got that core customer base that have said, okay, you know, pandemic problems, we need you to shift and give us something that is different than what you provide today to keep this existing customer happy instead of chasing these customers that are not buying things in the pandemic. So if you've got a core base or some key customers, and you know, I think a lot of smaller ISVs, And we did this, it's not no judgment here, but have a handful of those marquee customers that have way more weight in your revenue percentages than you really should, but hey, you're not going to turn them away, right? So if 40% of your revenue is coming from like 5 customers and they come to you and say, hey, we need custom code, we need buy online pickup in store for COVID, and you're not going to be able to charge an uplift monthly for that, but they're going to pay you $100,000 to do the integration, sure, you know, I'm going to do that. Like, I need to keep my doors open as an ISV. But outside of that sort of scenario, I really, to your point, Dean, couldn't picture what that would be like. Well, how would we backslide on our SaaS delivery model. And so I think it must have been that type of thing, like key customer saying, hey, help me.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But it's still good to hear, you know, going back to the resellers, 34% of them have fully, completely transitioned their businesses and as a service. It was a good call out. Another one that I had, though, because I'm, you know me, I'm a marketing guy, so I got to dig into the marketing numbers. And Will, you already kind of touched on it, but man, how, and I think I might have brought this up last year, too, but how depressing. I'm going to read it off. One in 10 solutions providers, that's 11.3%, say in 2023, they spent nothing on marketing, you know, and which is by far the highest percentage in history of this study that we had. Just to give you a parameter, it was 6.7 just a couple of years ago. So it almost doubling of the amount of resellers that aren't doing anything. To me, that screams complacency, and I worry about that. You know, if your profits are nice and steady, you know, I was just giving kudos on that. But if your profits are nice and steady and you don't feel the need to get out there and market yourself or do an improvement on additional services and market those services, yikes. I mean, just as a marketer, that makes me cringe that nearly 12% of people are saying no at all. But the positive sign here is that those that are participating in marketing are actually spending a little bit more. And, you know, that's interesting. That makes a lot of sense, too, because, I mean, obviously they see the value of marketing, the value of trying to get their unique services and products out into the marketplace. And so if they're spending a little bit of dollars to do that, I think Will brought up a great point that it's so hard to combat the big boys and the big players in a lot of these verticals. But you can do hyper local, you can do guerrilla. There's a lot of ways to differentiate yourself from that and get your foot in the door for these opportunities that you really need to leverage. And so, you know, I would say don't give up. And I'm glad that there's a significant portion that aren't. I got to talk to the 11.3% that aren't spending money on it. Right, Jim? Yeah.
Well, again, here's the thing. This is all anonymous data. Yeah. And sometimes people say, did you get my survey result? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I actually have no way of figuring out exactly who is who in this survey. But yeah, Dean, I feel the same way. And I think it's in the report of I've talked to some folks who say I can't compete with a multi-million dollar, you know, venture capital backed. So I'm just going to do nothing. It's like, well, maybe you can. Yeah, maybe you can spend smarter as opposed to just spending nothing there. So, all right, Will, so you're in the spot where you're an ISV VAR. And so talk about marketing from your perspective, not that you have to share, you know, POS Nation's inside numbers or anything like that. But did that surprise you? What's your take on what this report says about anemic marketing spend yet again?
I think it's a little bit surprising. Certainly that 11% not spending anything is surprising, you know, but I think the points are pretty obvious, right? That they just feel like, you know, most smaller businesses feel like there's no point. There's no sense in trying to compete. And they're not well-versed or educated on these other options. You know, Dean said guerrilla marketing like that. If you're just laser-focused on my Google profile, then I don't, you know, I'm not thinking about how I can go do hyperlocal and guerrilla marketing events or integrate with other organizations. And I think the other thing I think a lot of these VARs have done and small ISVs is word-of-mouth marketing. You know, and it's worked to a certain point. You know, referrals and local word-of-mouth. So it's been working. I'm just going to keep doing that. Well, I don't know that your 10, you know, customers in that vertical in your area are that clued into who the new ones are. Do they, you know, are they really, is the network that tight? So, you know, as you scale, like obviously the bigger the company, probably the higher percentage of revenues we're spending on marketing. It's a little bit, you know, it adds up. So, sure. You know, we're fortunate to be able to say we can go spend in a lot of different ways. So we pay for leads, we pay for SEO, we have a sophisticated marketing department. And so we're able to do some things that I would not suggest a smaller entity of any shape do. But I think the idea that you're just going to not do anything because it seems futile is certainly the wrong way to go. You know, just take a step back, you know, decide not to waste money on SEO or paid placement for terms that are not going to work. But like I was saying earlier, if there's a very niche market or there's a way to do local numbers or just go out and do local events, you know, go get out in front of people some other way. But just assuming that a business is going to come in the door, you know, is not a good bet.
Yeah.
So.
I agree.
If you don't do those things, people will forget you and they think you're not in business. And when they need something that you provide, they won't even think about you because you're not going to have any mind share whatsoever. Like, it's just a fundamental thing. So that's why I always, you know, at least do some social media so people know that you're alive. Or like you said, do some local events or something of that nature. Again, we're not telling everybody spend, you know, millions of dollars on marketing, but at least do something to let people know you're still an ongoing entity.
No, yep, and as the study shows, I think, sorry, Will, the study shows around 50% don't spend more than, are probably in that 4-8% range. So, yeah, it's not a lot of dollars. You don't have to allocate a lot of resources, but you should do something, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay.
And speaking of marketing, let's pause here to let our listeners and viewers know about the Retail Solutions Providers Association. Man, you guys set me up perfectly. The RSP is North America's largest community of VARs, software developers, vendors, and distributors in the retail, restaurant, grocery, and cannabis verticals. The RSP is a perfect fit for any organization that's serious about growth in those markets. Also, we want to say thanks to our annual sponsors who support the RSP community and make this podcast and video series possible. Our gold sponsors are CoCard, Epson, Heartland, and ScanSource. And our platinum sponsor is, Dean, I'll put you on the spot. Do you know who our platinum sponsor is?
I'm going to go with Blue Star, Jim.
It is Blue Star. You are correct. Ding, ding, ding. To accelerate your success through an RSP membership or sponsorship, email membership@gorspa.com. .org. Also, we want to make sure to remind everybody, registration is now open for Retail Now 2024, the Retail IT Channel's number one trade show, education, conference, and networking event. This year's event is set for July 28th through 30th at the Paris Hotel in Las Vegas. For more information, visit gorspa.org/retail now. Retail Now is where the industry meets. All right. And again, a reminder, we talked about the RSP website. If you want your own copy of the 2024 RSP Retail IT Channel KPI study, go to our website, click on resources, and then industry reports in the drop down menu. All right. You gentlemen ready for me to throw some of my thoughts at you and get your feedback? Again, we did not coordinate before the show, though. I will say a few things that I highlighted, I crossed out because you guys had the same things jump out. So we had a brand new section that we added to our report this year at the request of our members. And so the question that the report said is, are VARs too dependent on payment? So I want to hear each of you weigh in on that. But let me share the report data first. So first, nearly 50% of VAR respondents said they generate half or more of their revenue through payments. Other streams combined hit that number. Hardware 18%, services 18%, software 11.5%. Now the hybrids that we have, again, that's of someone who serves as both an ISV and a VAR, they were much more evenly distributed. Only 17% said payments. Only 17 compared to almost 46% of those VARs. A quarter of the hybrids said half or more of the revenue comes from services. 17% said software. Zero, none, said hardware. And again, it doesn't add up to 100% there because of the diversity that they have. It seems like very few of them have more than half of the revenue coming from one source. So my question for you, Will, you want to take this first? Are VARs too dependent on payments?
Well, the cop-out answer is, of course, it depends. But, you know, I think, you know, we don't want to say that they shouldn't be doing payments. And I hear this from VARs, you know, oh, you know, we don't want to get into payments because it's a dirty business, or we don't want to be those guys. You know, we want to be the upstanding face of just the business services and leave processing. And that is an outdated idea. You know, we have to get away from that because you're just leaving revenue on the table. But I think you need to look at that mix of other revenue. Like, how realistically are we defining value to our merchant? And so if we're going to people and saying, hey, free POS, discounted services, hardware at cost, or rental hardware, you know, I'm going to lease the hardware, I'm not going to make any money on it, and then I'm going to only make money on processing, this is not healthy. Because we are ultimately at the whims of a third party like that. They get bought by the other big processor who changes their their model, or says, you know, changes pricing or something, or you have an outage and everybody gets mad. You know, you have one day where all of your customers are down all day because that processor has an outage. They're looking for new systems right away. So, you know, I certainly think that having all your merchants on one processor and having it be 50, 60, 70% of your total revenue is pretty extreme and risky, in my opinion. But I don't think you should back away from payments. I think you should look at driving value in your other solutions. Like, how do I charge more for software? How do I add services? So we keep the payments revenue and we just make it a smaller chunk of the pie.
Exactly right. Grow those other areas, add more services, so you're not so dependent just on one revenue stream. So thank you, Will. Dean, are VARs too dependent on payments?
It kind of feels like it. And I'll give you an anecdote. When we were at Inspire, obviously the conversation around cash discounting, surcharging, some of the changes that could be happening in the marketplace had a lot of the resellers quaking in their shoes. And I had some very pointed conversations with some of them that, you know, were literally, you know, afraid of what it could mean and what their business was going to look like in months, not years. You know, it had some decisions come down and things of that nature. And so it just gets you to thinking like, oh my gosh, have we built business models around, you know, failability in the sense that, yeah, if you're putting a lot of what your business is into this basket and relying on the payments aspect of it, oosh, you can find yourself in a world of hurt, which unfortunately I think some folks are, you know, boots on the ground. It is a real concern. So, I think Will's answer was excellent. He's much closer to that than I am, but I'm just giving you the anecdote that I could feel palpable, you know, just some of the nervousness around the payments question right now. And so if I was a business owner in that, I would do exactly what you just said, Jim. I would start diversifying as best as I could where my revenues are coming from so that that part of the egg gets a little bit smaller and a little bit smaller.
Yeah. And Dean, somebody just actually asked me this yesterday and they said, how have you seen VARs diversify their revenue stream and add more recurring revenue? And I said, honestly, they've used that list that you alluded to earlier, the ultimate list of recurring revenue. You can find it on the RSPA website or just search ultimate recurring revenue, RSPA. I'm sure it'll pop up first. And I said, what folks do is they go through that list and they look and see, okay, highlight what am I already doing on a recurring revenue basis? Then what are other things I'm charging for and I can shift to recurring revenue? Then it's what things on that list am I doing for free and maybe I should start charging even just a little bit for it. And then Yes. You say, what things am I not doing on this list and what are one or two things I can add based on the way my company's structured and based on what my merchants need that I can start adding? Like it's almost a methodical thing. And again, the list of 49 on there, those are all actually installed by retail IT VARs. It's not like just some dream, you know, right. Situation there. It's like, you know, no one would ever do this. Now, some of them are rare. Like I think one has like music management or something like that, but there's a whole lot that you can do. So that's how far it's go about it. So Dean, this will tie in with marketing as well. The anecdote that you brought up kind of reminds me of, remember when Facebook changed their algorithm?
Yes.
You had all these businesses that were like, no, my entire business is based on Facebook and I'm not showing up anymore. And they're complaining. It's like, Facebook doesn't care. You know, that old thing, Honey Badger don't care. You know, Facebook doesn't care. And so if you're putting everything in that business model, that probably makes you go, boy, that's really running a risk, because if they lay down a road in an area you don't want to go, you just got to go for the ride because you're along with it. So I guess, Absolutely. Dean, I'll get your take on that. Is that an appropriate analogy with Facebook and VARs Absolutely. Maybe too reliant on payments?
Absolutely. It's a great analogy. And I think the world is rife with these things. I mean, Google, look at what Google's doing right now with a cookie. The cookie is crumbling. They're totally changing the field, disrupting the advertising world. People are shaking in their shoes if you're on online advertising at this point. So, yes, I think it's highly relevant. And again, you know, if you can see that coming down the road, like some of these things are, mitigate the risk.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Will, final word on that subject?
Yeah, I mean, I think don't be overcome with doubt or fear that you can't do this. You know, I think a lot of people haven't diversified because you go look at a list of 49 things and go, I can't do all these, or it's only, I have to hire software developers. Like, go pick one, you know, go do one this quarter and see how it works. It's okay to fail, figure out what went wrong and do another one next quarter, but get started, you know, start adding things, figure out how as an organization to bolt on services and additional revenue streams. And to your point, don't give stuff away, you know, your time is worth something. And then, you know, make sure your sales reps understand how to sell the value in it and, you know, incentivize them on add-ons and recurring revenue, not hardware margins or upfront sales. And that's a hard thing to, a hard conversation to have, but once everybody buys in, then it's, you know, we're back to a flywheel type mentality where everybody understands I've got to go get the $20 this month and I'll make $200 over the next 6 months.
Yes. Yep.
Solid advice.
Well said. Yeah. Try test, measure, adapt, and then rinse and repeat, right? Keep doing that. That's what the successful solution providers do. All right, we only have a few minutes left. I want to bring up at least this next one. It's about acquisitions, or Dean, as a mutual friend of ours, calls it channel rub. And so we asked, over the next 24 months, what is your company's plan related to acquisitions? Do you plan to acquire another company? Do you aspire to be acquired, or neither? They had to choose one of those three. And then so reading from the report, it says 19% plan to acquire another company, 18% aspire to be acquired, 62% have no plans either way. That was overall. Then we split by business model, and this was the surprising number. VARs, who people have always worried in our space that they were going to be on the receiving end of acquisitions, they were the category leader for planning on purchasing another company. Nearly a quarter of VARs, 23%, said they are in acquisition mode, up from 6% last year. It stunned me. Dean, did it surprise you?
Yes, a little bit. And getting into, because this is one of the call outs I had as well. On the other side there, the headline for me was aging reseller base wants out. So, you know, there was, the data is showing that 1 out of 5 solution providers are ready to be scooped up. So you were going down the acquisition path, right? We're seeing strong interest of resellers acquiring others. Well, I guess the good news is you've got the other camp that's saying, hey, I don't mind being bought right now. 1 in 5 are saying that. That's just it's further data. You know, we talk about it all the time, to be serious. You know, you've got an aging population that's been in this industry for a long time. There is clearly some exit strategies that are going to be executed over the next 1 to 2 years. And if you are in the mode that you just mentioned, Jim, where you're excited about acquisitions and you see that as a path to growth, I would say, yeah, it looks like it might be. And you might not have to look too far, because 1 out of 5 might be looking to sell their practice. Really interesting, though, isn't it?
Yes. And Will, if you want to give your take, and full disclosure, POS Nation, and you're part of POS Nation because of an acquisition. POS Nation has done multiple acquisitions over the years. What was your take on these numbers?
So this was the third point I had penciled in to talk about. So, you know, I think, you know, Dean said exit strategy, and you pointed out the people that want to buy and the people that want to sell. And I would just say, like, perhaps sounds overly negative, but hope is not an exit strategy, and hope is not an acquisition strategy. So we have to be very, very realistic when we say things like, we want to buy another company. Like, how are you going to do that? You know, what company are you going to buy? Who's going to pay for it? Credit's not great right now. You know, so going, and you're not going to go to your local bank and say, give me a loan to go buy $1 million other business. And then kind of to Dean's point, you know, and this is the unfortunate reality of founder-led companies. And Jim, you know, you said we've acquired and we've talked to, and I've talked to a lot of ours and some of these other organizations that have done a lot of M&A. And you have that classic story of you're buying a company, but you're buying somebody's pride and joy and their baby and their 40 years, you know, their body of work. So you have to, it can take a year or more to get to a realistic valuation without hurting a lot of feelings and breaking the process. So, you know, as someone who's looking for an exit, you have to be willing to talk to a consultant or someone and say, what is the real value of this business? Not, well, we've done all these things and there's all this great stuff, and I've got this award from the local council in 1999 that we were the best solution provider. Like, nobody cares. You know, it's like, what's the revenue and what's the repeatable revenue? And so if you're doing 70% of your business is transactional and you don't have recurring revenue and you don't have modern platforms, the business is worth like 1x your current revenue. They will pay you your paycheck this year to go away. And if you've got 70% of your business is recurring revenue, you've got payments, you've got add-ons, you've got a healthy staff, it's more like 6x. And so just keep that in mind, you know, when you have that conversation. And I would say the same thing to buyers, like, why? You know, why are you going to buy a company? It sounds good. You hear a lot about M&A. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the things I like about it for Avar is if there are those people in the area that are, you know, in your region that are winding down their business, it's an immediate way to growth. New product, potential staff benefits. You know, you're buying expertise, you're buying service coverage for those customers that you weren't able to reach before, and you're buying up market share. You know, you're putting a competitor out of business. So if you can put together a real business model around acquiring some of those people that are wanting to exit and get to a real valuation, you know, don't overpay, then I think it's an extremely strong move. But don't just buy it because it's there. You know, look at the business, look who's there, look who's going to run it. If it means putting all of your staff on it, just to keep it operating, like, you've cost yourself money. Like, you're going to die next year from making that, you know, you'll, the yes. boa chokes on the pig kind of thing. But, so just, you know, it's really interesting that many people are talking about it, but it, you know, it's something you need to look hard at and see if it makes sense for either side of the table.
Agreed.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. So my final question, it goes back to kind of where you started us off, Will, in terms of was the open-ended section that we have at the end of the study. So we asked, the final question is about threats, challenges, and opportunities. And so those who are taking the survey, they can share whatever they want. Will touched on some of the threats that were mentioned earlier, but challenges. Dean, just for the second consecutive year, nobody mentioned supply chain. I'm sure that makes you feel better coming out of COVID. Everything was just supply chain or some
derivation. Let's not go back there, shall we?
No, absolutely not. Yeah, we'll speak it out of existence for sure. So this survey had the most positive comments. You know, we talk about challenges and opportunities, and I get like this long list of challenges and a handful of opportunities, but this here is pretty fairly balanced. And some of what they said was niche focus versus general restaurant. You brought up that up, Will. SaaS recurring revenue, new POS software providers, tech like retail media networks, AI, data aggregation, security, self-service, kiosk, MSP services, and one said, we're in major growth mode. And so my final question for both of you, Will, we'll start with you and then Dean, like, how do you feel about the state of the retail IT channel based on what you saw in this study, the experiences, and also, again, we saw a lot of folks who were bullish about it. What are your thoughts on, you know, the state of the industry?
So, Jim, that list of things people are excited about and or are doing and succeeding on, to me, sounds just like the things RSPA's been saying for 5 years, you got to go do. So that, that kind of warms my heart. It sounds great. Like, the people are doing this and seeing it work, not just like, oh, I read this report and tried it and it failed and now we're out of business. Like, that's great. You know, and if everybody can chip away at these things and not focus on the negatives, not say, oh, it's going to be hard and not try it, like the marketing things we talked about, like, there's success to be had. A lot of the people that were going to fail have already failed. So, you know, these strong businesses are going to get stronger, and a lot to be optimistic about.
Great. Dean, what's your take?
I totally agree with that. And it's heartening to see a lot of positivity in the marketplace because, you know, I'm a glass half full kind of guy anyway. So I think there's a lot to be excited about. If you're into technology, if you're a little bit geeky, which I can't imagine you're in this world and you're not one of those two or both of those two things, there's just all kinds of stuff to get excited about. I mean, yeah, okay, AI, nobody really understands how AI is going to impact us just yet. It's not even the Wild West yet. It's like this fog off in the distance. What is it going to do, kind of a thing? But that's exciting because I think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity. There are some nearer term stuff, you know, when you get into mobility or kiosks or, you know, just some of these technologies that really, it's not a hard pivot over to some of these things to get involved in, or getting into MSPs, you know, as we've talked about, some of these managed services. There's just a lot of reasons why, you know, should be excitement around retail. Look, retail is not going anywhere. If you ask me, you can ask my daughters, you can ask my son, they're all younger. They all still love to go out in brick and mortar and in a shop, you know, in a tactile way. So it's not going anywhere, but the technology coming into it is exciting. So yeah, good stuff.
Hey. Amen. Excellent. Yeah, there's a lot of challenges that retailers and restaurants are facing, and a lot of them can be solved with technology. And thank goodness we're a community of technology solution providers. So things are primed for us. So excellent. Well, that does it for this episode of The Trusted Advisor. We hope you enjoyed our discussion. If you did, be sure to subscribe to the RSPA YouTube channel and the Trusted Advisor podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you'd like to learn more best practices for VARs and ISVs in the retail technology industry, check out the RSPA blog. You can find it at gorspa.org and clicking on RSPA blog. As we said earlier, the RSPA website is also where you can secure your own copy of the 2024 RSPA Retail IT Channel KPI study for free. Before we go, big thanks again to Dean Riverman and Will Atkinson for sharing their wisdom with us today. Thanks also to RSPA Marketing Director Chris Arnold for his production work, Joseph McDade for our music, and last but not least, thanks so much to you for listening. Our goal at the RSPA is to accelerate the success of our members in the retail technology ecosystem by providing knowledge and connections. For more information, visit our website at gorspa.org. Thanks for listening, and goodbye, everybody.